Have you ever been a part of something that just never seems like it's going right? All right, I hear some giggles. What was that like? How did you see others responding, or how did you see yourself responding? Frustration sometimes, yep. What else? Just say, sometimes you have to say it like it is. Yeah. Yeah, and that's hard. Yeah. What else? All right, I heard a lot more giggles than I'm hearing responses. What kind of lasting impact did you experience from that? How has that stuck with you?
Humility.
Humility, okay. Thank you from the giggle section. Yes. Rage, yeah, so you kind of feel the gamut of things, yeah. Today we see how God responds when things are just not going right, through a parable, but it's a parable about reality. So we see how God responds, and that he responds offensively to people when things are not going right. So I'd love for us to reflect on why, as followers of Jesus, or as those considering following Jesus, why we actually need to allow ourselves to be offended if we're going to truly follow him. So that's where we're going to camp out. That's going to be super comfortable, I can tell. We're going to hang out in our gospel passage today. Let me just read again verse 9, where we start. Jesus went on to tell the people this parable. A man planted a vineyard, rented it to some farmers, and went away for a long time. Pretty straightforward situation so far. I want to put a little bit of context around this. This is just a scene or two after the triumphal entry. Jesus entering into Jerusalem, people waving palms, hailing him as king. They don't fully get it. They'll all abandon him by the end. But that's already happened, even though we're doing that next Sunday. So that's what's happened. He is in Jerusalem. He's in the heart of the Jewish faith. And he is teaching day by day at the temple when he says this parable. It's a little bit challenging there. In the temple at Jerusalem, if anybody heard a story beginning with a vineyard, their ears would certainly have perked up. Why? A lot of commentators have noticed there are a lot of parallel themes in this parable to Isaiah chapter 5. There's a big watershed passage, one of the prophets of God's people. Let me just read a few verses from it. Isaiah chapter 5, beginning of verse 1. I will sing for the one I love, a song about his vineyard. My loved one had a vineyard on a fertile hillside. He dug it up, he cleared it of stones and planted it with the choicest vines. He built a watchtower in it and cut out a wine press as well. Then he looked for a crop of good grapes, but it yielded only bad fruit. Then on in verse 4, what more could have been done for my vineyard than I have done for it? The vineyard is a common theme to describe God's people, especially God's people, Israel. There are many more parallels. This is a big one here. Notice that it starts out really positive. Themes of love and delight in this vineyard. The vineyard is such an image of beautiful care, tenderness. I mean, imagine removing the stones, tilling the soil, planting the vineyard, right? The unspoken things, the pruning of the vines, making sure it's healthy, it has what it needs. There's this beautiful relationship of delight between the vineyard owner and the vineyard in those first verses. Caring, attentiveness, and he's in it for the long run. You don't plant a vineyard expecting to get fruit in 1 year, right? You're in it for the long haul. So it's initially a positive image, but it takes a sour turn. Verse 7 in Isaiah chapter 5, the vineyard of the Lord Almighty is the nation of Israel, if anybody had any doubts. and the people of Judah are the vines he delighted in. Hear the grief in that. The people of Judah are the vines he delighted in, and he looked for justice but saw bloodshed, for righteousness but heard cries of distress. We see what the analogy of the vineyard is laying over these people. God is blessing them with everything they can imagine, and they're responding in all the wrong ways, forgetting him completely, treating each other terribly. Back in our Luke chapter 20 passage, we need to carry that image in the back of our minds to understand what's going on here. The vineyard, which is the theme of love and delight, has become a theme of judgment and grief. The rising question that we can carry from Isaiah chapter 5, I think, is that one question: what more could I have done for my vineyard than I've done for it? It's this question of somebody who's gotten to the end of himself. What more could I have done to make this go right, and yet it still did not? So let's carry that grief as we read verse 10 in our passage. At harvest time, he sends a servant to the tenants so they would give him some of the fruit of the vineyard. But the tenants beat him and sent him away empty-handed. This is a standard contract for first century ancient Near East. Somebody plants a vineyard, they hire folks, they get a share of the fruit, the owner gets a share of the fruit. Nothing wrong with what's going on here. There's an interesting implication that actually the vineyard is fruitful under these farmers. So this is a little bit different than Isaiah chapter 5. Jesus riffs on a theme here. This vineyard is fruitful at the hands of some people who are going to do some really interesting things here in a moment. Why would they put up a fight for a vineyard that just isn't producing? As there was success with this vineyard, the farmers forget their place. Three times a servant was sent to collect the owner's portion, and three times they were treated shamefully, beaten up, sent away empty-handed. One commentator said, in Greco-Roman commerce, a servant often functioned as a virtual stand-in for his master with regard to leased properties. What does this mean? When the tenants, on the first time, beat up this servant and send him away empty-handed, they are doing no less than declaring war against the owner of the vineyard. And they're claiming this vineyard as truly theirs. They've forgotten their place. Now let's reflect on the vineyard owner for a moment. He has already practiced bad business. He is in a bad situation here. This thing went sideways fast. Right? After the first servant was sent and sent back empty-handed, that would have been an entirely appropriate time to say, I'm going to cut my losses, send in the forces, and just take back this vineyard. He doesn't do that. He thinks, maybe they'll change their mind if I send a second servant. Does that. Same thing happens. At that point, it is crazy not to send somebody in and take back what's rightfully his. That's not what he does. He somehow does this cost-return analysis, and he says, I'm going to send a third servant into this situation. Relationships have obviously gone sideways. The third servant is treated shamefully and sent away again. And there's a real risk, not just to what he's financially losing in this vineyard, but by this point, he's already lost so much of his reputation. He's soft. Somebody wants to take his stuff, he's not going to be that aggressive with them, right? Reputation is a real thing at this point. Sorry to bring it up, but the stock market these days is going nuts. Apparently, about 60% of Americans say that they own stocks, and these days are desperately looking to mitigate our investment's vulnerability. Now, this is a good practice in business today. Mitigate your vulnerabilities. Even before the stock market plunge this past week, there were many articles that were things like three things, five things, seven things to mitigate or minimize your financial investments. We've all seen them. Usually they're all getting at the idea of spreading out your investments so that no one thing is going to tank you too much. There is a common sense idea of minimizing your vulnerability in the business world. That is not what this vineyard owner, i.e. business investor, is doing. He does not listen to reasonable advice about what to do with his vineyard. The reasonable thing would be to send the army in. He doesn't do that. To take his vineyard back. He doesn't do that. Instead, he becomes even more vulnerable after this third servant is sent away empty-handed. This is bad business for first century ancient Near East, becoming more vulnerable. It's because God is in a different business. God is in the business of grace. Now, we learn later on that this parable is a parable that judges the temple leaders. This is offensive to them. They need to be offended by this. Jesus intentionally offends them in this way. N.T. Wright, another commentator, says, no first century Jew would have needed to be told that the owner stood for God, the farmers for Israel, and the messengers for the prophets. Common understanding where he's teaching. Remember, temple setting. So Jesus is intentionally offending the Pharisees and the Sadducees, but they would not allow themselves to be offended by what he's saying. Jesus says, you are not cutting it. You are not caring for God's people. You are not doing the things that you're supposed to do as the farmers of this vineyard. In case we were wondering about this, verse 19 puts a T on it. Luke tells us that the teachers of the law and the chief priests looked for a way to arrest him immediately because they knew he had spoken the parable against them. Offensive to their face. If they could only have received it, something might have gone better. But they were more about respectability. The temple hierarchy. We're going to make sure everything's done right, that our places of prominence are protected. We're going to make sure that we have what we need, that we're doing all the right things, dotting the I's, crossing the T's. We're going to wear the right things. Now, these are not bad things in and of themselves. But what are they giving up to protect them so much? This is parallel to the tenants who cared so much about keeping this vineyard that they wound up having everything taken away from them. And certainly, we have to keep in mind all the prophets that were sent to God's people, to the temple, who were parallel to the servants. God continually extending grace, an invitation to listen, to come back, to return, to change your mind about what you're doing. So he offends the hierarchy of the temple. But this isn't the only people that he's offending with this story. If you think also about anyone who's not part of the temple hierarchy there, which predominantly would have been Jewish people, but not only, this parable is still offensive. Who wants a God who is this bad at business? The resources to send in this many servants and then to say, I will send my only son. Maybe they will respect him. That word respect is really interesting there. I have a note on it somewhere. Where is it? Entrepo, the Greek word. To respect, yes, but kind of to be ashamed, to be shamed by. Maybe they will be shamed if I send my son in and remember what they're doing. He makes himself more vulnerable because he longs for this relationship to be different than it is. But this is bad business. We so often look to religion as something to help us get ahead in life. Is this going to make me a better person? Is this going to help me be more mature? Is this going to help me have better relationships and business practices? And am I going to get ahead in life because I follow this religion? Is it going to make things easier? But Jesus doesn't let us off the hook there. He says, no, the right kind of business is actually making yourself more vulnerable, giving up the climbing of the ladder here. Certainly people in first century ancient Near East would have seen the bad business practices that are going on here. He's losing so much. Why would I follow a god like this instead of one of the powerful gods of the pantheon? Why would I follow this kind of a god? The cry of the vineyard owner just feels so visceral to me. It recalls the cry of the vineyard owner in Isaiah. Here in Luke chapter 20, he says, "What shall I do?" before he sends his son in. And this is not the cry of somebody who's primarily concerned with mitigating his vulnerability. What shall I do? The good business was clear. Retake the vineyard. Everyone would have said, what do you mean, what shall you do? You know what to do. What shall I do? We know this is available to him because he eventually does that. The sooner the better. What shall I do? In offending our business sensibilities and increasing his own vulnerability, God offends us. He brings himself lower. And he asks, will you allow yourself to be offended by me? We think we like the idea of grace. But when it applies to that person or that other person, I don't know. Is that a God that I really want to follow? Each subsequent servant represents God's longing and desire to repair relationship. His son, of course, a thinly veiled allusion to Jesus himself, represents God's deepest desire for repair of relationship above anything else. He makes himself utterly vulnerable for us to offend us if we will only allow ourselves to be offended. Why? Because God is in the business of grace. I've heard it, grace described this way. You got to kind of compare it to justice and mercy. So justice, giving somebody what they deserve. I've heard mercy then called not giving somebody what they deserve. But grace is giving to somebody what they have not deserved. That guy over there? That person over there? Really? God is in the business of grace. He's a bad businessman, but he's a good businessman in the business of grace. We, like the Pharisees, actually love respectability. We love respectable people. We love being respectable people. Having it all together, or at least seeming like it. We love seeming like a respectable church. But if we're a respectable church, I would challenge that we've kind of gotten it all wrong. Because this whole following Jesus, the businessman of grace, this whole endeavor is entirely not respectable according to today's standards. Are you willing to be challenged by Jesus' business of grace? Where do you actually go with Jesus until? Maybe I'll believe in him up until this one point where I really don't like that thing. That's the moment we need to let ourselves be offended. Maybe our practices are in a totally different world than our faith, or our business, or our relationships. What would it look like to allow Jesus to offend by just breaking in to how we do life? Following Jesus is a life of allowing ourselves to be offended. Jesus came not to save the respectable, but to save sinners. If we can't admit that that's who we are, that we need help, we need grace, we're not respectable enough to earn our way into the kingdom. If we can't admit that, then we haven't allowed ourselves to be offended by him. We haven't allowed ourselves to receive the life on the other side of that offense. Where do you need to let the Holy Spirit offend you this afternoon? That's the question I want to leave us with as we listen. Take a moment to pause. Allow the Holy Spirit to speak to us. As Amanda gets up there, I'm going to buy her another 30 seconds and just say, this practice is as simple as clearing our minds and listening, or turning inward and noticing what we're feeling. Sometimes holding our hands up and open in kind of this physical posture of receiving something. There's nothing magical about it, but there's something to it. We're just beginning a conversation with the Lord, wherever it is that you feel like he's moving. Come, Holy Spirit.